Welcome to Real Geeks and Season's Greetings. There's blood in the water. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And odds are, if this is not the movie Crash hates me for, I don't know what will be.
This is definitely the film I hate you for.
Yes!
Wow! Like, respect to it. Obviously, everyone involved is having a lot of fun. It makes a lot of choices. It makes a lot of gamble. Takes a lot of gambles. But sweet fucking Jesus. Why? God damn. Why? This is 2018's Sci-Fi Channel original Santa Jaws.
Did you guys hear those bells?
She's coming. Oh, she's coming in hot.
Get into position.
Okay. We can do this, guys. Ready?
Nice shot.
Wherefore, what? So, okay, no, I guess the first thing to start with is, how did you come across this monstrosity, and why did you not just throw it into Mount Doom as sealed, or throw it into the fire?
Well, I mean, I feel like the first answer is obvious. We were looking for a Christmas schlock. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we wanted the worst of the worst Christmas films.
And you certainly did succeed. I mean, I feel like we would have to start, like, touching, like, vaguely touching and considering the original Star Wars Holiday Special to reach this depth. I mean, like, you know how Heinrich Schliemann, when he discovered or claimed to discover the ruins of Troy, he did so rather than digging down and meticulously categorizing it and cataloging everything and making sure. He just said, no, fuck it. Make a pit, stick some dynamite in it, blow it up wherever you got that Trojan, baby. And what he ended up doing in the process was he actually blew up the level that was, like, the Trojan War, and everything he claimed was from the Trojan War was actually older and from, like, a deeper pit. So you, in searching for holiday schlock, just filled a hole with dynamite, blew up the layer that you were looking for, and went too deep.
Well, what can I say? I take pride in my work.
Well, he didn't.
But no, it was like I was trying to figure out what our lineup was going to be, because at that point we had Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and Violent Night,
yeah,
and that was it. So
yeah, and you're right, that's not necessarily enough. It's true, we do need more and more and such, but like. Woo! You definitely found a unique property. Let's just say that.
So I was looking through my buddy of mine's server that I have access to, and it was basically where I get my content from. And he has a subfolder specifically for Christmas stuff. And I'm going through it just to see what's there, and I see Santa Jaws, and I'm like, I've seen all of the Sharknado movies, so I feel like I have an idea of where this is going.
And see, like, that's almost the final insult of this, is it's not even a part of the oeuvre and creative force that is Sharknado. It is ripping off the attention Sharknado and its sequels got to make a cheesier than cheesy. Like, this isn't a B movie. This isn't a D, J, K, Z, whatever movie. This is like someone filling a used, like, dinghy. This is like someone going to a yard sale, finding an inflatable child's raft, and claiming it's the ship of Theseus because it's a boat.
Oh yeah, no, like this. I feel like is very much, like the one important distinction we have to make here is that the Sharknado films were from The Asylum, those beautiful low budget, glorious B movie bastards at the Asylum Studios. Mm-hmm. Those would be like aired on the Sci-Fi Channel. Santa Jaws is the Sci-Fi Channel going, yeah, I'm sure we could do that with even less money.
Yeah, why are we paying these people when we can do all this shit in-house and just outside the office? And I'm pretty sure it was filmed outside the office. And yes, I'm crapping on this film, and yes, it deserves to be crapped on.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also, like, it's so obviously a labor of, like, semi-love, or, like, it's this film. I want to see a making of the film. Not that I think that there was necessarily anything interesting behind it, but I get the feeling it would be like a community theater project where it's like, oh, we were all just like, we're friends and we wanted to do something together. And we were like, we've never made a movie. And so we made a movie. Like, this film itself sucks ass, but the making of this film has the potential to be a really, really cheesy Hallmark film.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, this is the Sci-Fi Channel going, oh yeah, we could do that too. And this is as I said to you in our chat, the one word that I'm going to keep using over the course of this episode.
Plagiarism.
No, almost.
Yeah.
Almost. Sci-Fi, yeah. You almost did it.
Hey, they almost did a lot of things with this. It's almost a lot of other movies. So, okay, without further ado, Santa Jaws is the heartwarming tale of a preschool shootout kid who's definitely just like one bullying event away from going total shithouse on everyone around him. Finding... Instead of the Death Note journal, he gets a Death Note pen, or der Death Noten Penviren, or some fucking bullshit. It's a magical German pen. Why is it German? Because fuck you. We don't have to actually come up with a translation, and it sounds threatening. That's why.
And apparently German looks like Elvish.
And apparently, I mean, yes, it does. That's unrelated. That nerd's such a fucking moron. Anyway, this child, this fella, is one half of a creative team behind the indie comic, and by indie comic, I mean there's one copy, Santa Jaws, which is, it's about a shark that eats Santa Claus and becomes empowered by his Christmas magic, who knows how it works, and at the end gets killed by a macho guy with a scar and a flamethrower. Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the comic anyway. And by the nature of really bad internal logic, this main character decides to ink his comic with this enchanted pen, which of course brings Santa Jaws to life and doesn't do anything else aside more or less from essentially just Santa Jaws.
It does do other stuff, but that other stuff is so peripheral that it might as well
so peripheral, and quite frankly, again, not internally consistent.
Also cliche.
This is a monkey's paw. Yeah, this is a monkey's paw that does one thing bad and then goes, you know what? I'm going to be nice for the rest of this movie. Oh, okay. I figured you weren't just wishing it away because that would obviously have some sort of repercussion. It barely does. Oh, okay. Anyway, he hates his mom, so he creates a bloodthirsty fucking magic demon shark. And then spends the rest of the movie essentially just being like, I love my mother. I love my mother. I mean, yeah, you were right when you contacted me and said, this kid's gonna kill someone someday.
Yeah. It was like literally pretty much as soon as we're introduced to roughly 14-year-old Cody, he's literally in his darkened bedroom using his binoculars to peek through the blinds at the girl across the street that he has a crush on. Because remember, roughly the first half hour of this movie is basically an after-school special.
Yeah, and not one that makes the salient points.
No.
No, in this, the incel gets the girl. Which also feels unfortunately apt for like a sci-fi made film.
Yeah, this is in a nutshell. I'm oddly going to compare this to Violent Night, but bear with me for a moment here. See, Violent Night took Christmas movies like Home Alone, Die Hard, and so forth, and mixed them together with the action of John Wick movies. And those actually go together. Santa Jaws decided to mix a smidgen of Home Alone because you have the same wish for his family to be gone with a shark movie and an after school special and an almost Goonies-esque young adult movie.
Yeah.
This mixture does not work.
No, it does not work, and it kind of knows that it doesn't work, and its response more or less is to go, yeah, but just watch this. And then it, like, tries to do a flip and kind of, like, lands on its face and then goes, wasn't that cool? And you go, sure, buddy. Okay. It's a complicated film for me because... Would I watch it again in certain circumstances with other people to laugh at it?
Oh, yes, Lord, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, Lord, yeah. Is it good? No. Oh, God, no. There are so many terrible things I would rather watch than this film over again. It is so... Okay, here's the thing. I can't tell if it is a competent creative... looking at their budget and saying, well, I'm not going to try to do anything too stupid, but we're going to do the things we do stupid very stupidly. Or if it's someone who just doesn't understand what they're doing entirely. And I'm going to give the benefit of a doubt that this is a lot of creative choices driven by budget.
Yeah.
And they did what they could. Because, like, here's the funny thing. The shitty Santa Jaws doesn't look that bad. It doesn't look that bad. And that's kind of confusing on a couple of levels. It's like, okay, good. So that's where your money went. Instead of hiring a, like, has-been shit-end actor to headline this, you decide to stick with just, like, community players, and you put all that money into the effects budget. Such as it is. Okay, cool. Prioritizing. That's good. That's well done. But at the same time, what the fuck? why are these characters like this? Why is the plot like this? Why is the first person that the shark eats, despite the main character saying he hates his mom, his grandfather, who he adores? Like, I get it. It's a your comeuppance thing, but like, it's immediate. And then, despite living in a place by the water, like swampy water, that has crocodiles, as seen in later on in the movie, no one believes that his grandfather was pulled into the water and eaten. I can understand being like, it wasn't a shark, but if a kid in the Everglades tells me his grandfather got fucking pulled into the water and eaten, I'm gonna believe that it probably happened, because that shit fucking happens.
Well, the simple fact is that there is a lot of backstory with Cody's character that this movie just does not bother with.
It's not even a matter of show or tell. It tells,
yeah,
but it barely tells. Yeah. It kind of offhandedly excuses. And it's just like, oh yeah, he's always been kind of a shitty kid. And it's like, then start it with him in detention or him in therapy, you know, like where he has to explain away I can't think of the word for it, but it's like pathological lying. Like, have him be a pathological liar. Have that be explained going into it. Like, maybe he's a pathological liar due to, like, actually, yeah, if this was an 80s or early 90s movie, his pathological lying would be driven by a divorce. The divorce of that. But, like, you're not even doing that basic, cheesy groundwork. You're just being like, here's a loser. He's kind of an idiot. And you know what? Fuck him. Anyway, he's your hero. See you in an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, like, with that, like, bare minimum. The absolute bare minimum they could have done. There's a scene after that first kill where Cody goes to his favorite comic book store with a sign out front that reminded me an awful lot of Cape and Cowles, which was weird. And he's trying to convince his best friend and the shop owner that this shark attack has taken place. And they tell us these past times that Cody has told these similar lies for some reason. At the bare minimum, take that and find a way to do it earlier.
Yeah, do it earlier. Have it be clear that, yeah, he's a liar. He's a bit of a complete shithead. He's unreliable. And then have this all play out. Because otherwise, it comes to a bunch of weird questions like, where is his grandfather then? Why is no one interested in where his grandfather is? It's like, huh, you say that my father was killed, eh? All right, well, I will call him on his cell phone telephone, and if he answers, I'll know you're a fucking liar. You know, it's like, there's stuff you can do. And his best friend has no character.
He has no personality.
The writer of the book, I guess, technically, because like Cody's the artist. Okay, yeah. I get that. But he also seems to be the narrative driver. So like, what the fuck is Stan Lee doing over here?
Yeah, Cody's best friend, Steve. Now, you know how in a group of especially particularly geeky friends, more often than not, you're going to have that one friend who will try to crowbar puns into conversation as many times as he can.
Mm.
And as annoyed as you get with him, there's something about him that makes you want to keep him around. Steve is that friend. If that friend does not have that something.
Yeah. It's just, you were hired to be on screen. We're not entirely sure why. No, you don't have lines, but I guess we have to pay you for the day. You're not quite an extra, but you're not quite cast.
Again, almost.
Yeah, it's very almost like the comic book guy is almost a villain. In a smarter book, he would have been the guy from Needful Things, yeah, and given him the pen and been like, ha, 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 ha. Or he would have accidentally, like, he would have lost the pen. It would have belonged to a great comic book artist who, like, secretly may have been an evil wizard. And, like, he's trying to get the pen back, and the pen ends up getting used for this terrible thing. And the second the guy gets the pen, he gets eaten by the shark. And now the shark has the pen. See, that would be an escalation. Instead, he's like, he spends most of it. And I don't want to give credit to, like, oh, he pretends to be their friend for nefarious reasons. No. The character changes his behavior when necessary for the plot. So at the beginning, he's a comic book store owning dickhead of a cliche that you pretty much never see anymore. Sure. But he's not, like, a bad guy, and he's more or less their friend. Like, he's going to read their comic book and give notes. This isn't the bad guy. But later on, he just outright becomes, like, the closest thing this has to a human villain for no fucking reason.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, he's almost the villain. For much of the movie, he's almost the live-action comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yes, and very clearly drawn from that, but not like in an interesting way.
No.
I don't know. He gave me, like, the actor of it gave me big local comedian feelings. You're just like, oh yeah, this guy does open mic. Like, there's something about it.
Yeah, no, I could see that. Like, I think the biggest thing on his IMDb is NBA 2K18 and Cloak and Dagger.
And hey, listen, that's a Marvel property, and you've done more work than I have in it. It's just, at the very least, your portrayal of this felt very much like they just rounded up people from like the local, like open mic, and that's for everyone. That's right. The most interesting character in this is the grandpa, and they off him immediately. He kind of looks like fucking Santa Claus, and that should have meant something. If you have a magical Santa shark and a cast member who looks like Santa Claus, who gives the main character the magical fucking pen, have that have meaning of some sort, you bastards. Like I said when we were talking about Violent Night, I don't need the Viking backstory. I appreciate it, but I don't need it. This needs the Viking backstory or something for that to make sense, so that it's not just like, here's a random magical pen and now it creates Santa Jaws. And Santa Jaws isn't, like, all right, with Jaws the shark, especially once you get to Jaws 3, Jaws is malevolent. Intentionally malevolent. It's not a force of nature. It is a monster that wants to eat you in particular. Like, these are choices made. Fuck this town. Fuck this family. Fuck everyone in these films. Fuck you, Michael Caine. Yum yum. That's Jaws. It's malevolent. It's surprisingly smart. It can track you even if you, like, fly in a plane. It knows. Whatever. Santa Jaws seems to react to whatever scene it's in completely afresh. Sometimes it's a fucking moron. Sometimes it likes to play with people. Sometimes it's not even there. It, like, it's off getting craft services.
And I mean, like, first off, with the comparison to Jaws, Santa Jaws looks so plastic. You could have made a joke about the robot Jaws shark. And also, Like, let's be honest, Jaws 3 is basically the godfather of the entire shark as monster genre that we're discussing right now.
Oh, that's depressing. maybe the Godfather 3 of shark movies.
When you bought her first house, what was that like for you?
Oh, that was incredible for me, for my mother to have a house. Because we grew up in council houses, you know.
She was worried you couldn't afford it.
What I did is, one of the worst pictures I did was a picture, I think it was called Jaws 4.
The Revenge.
The Revenge, yeah. Mm. And I had a little part in that.
Damn thing's disappeared. He's gone.
And I was paid $1 million for 2 weeks' work. And with that money, I bought her the house. And someone said to me, I saw that Jaws 4. He said, it stinks. I said, I haven't seen it. I said, but I've seen the house it bought my mother, and it's marvellous.
Michael Caine making shitty film. Shitty film. Michael Caine.
Considering how bad a lot of these characters are written and how much a lot of these actors are struggling, I'm amazed that I'm saying this, but I think the single worst cast character in this movie is actually Georgia.
Yes.
Because I can completely see the Paris Hilton comparison that they're trying to do. And that actress is trying, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, she is. She's doing her best, but that's the thing, is like she's almost too interesting on screen. It's like, no, yo, you're supposed to be the ditzy arm candy who dies. Why are you being interesting? Stop it.
Yeah, like she is Ryan Reynolds as Hal Jordan levels of miscast.
Yeah, and like as well, you know, and so as well, I feel is, or at least miswritten, is her idiot rich boy husband.
Yeah.
Who, like, okay, I know the cliche, you're supposed to be a dickhead. And he's honestly engaging with the kids. And it's like, okay, I understand that you're here to die, but you're not making me hate you. You need to make me hate you. I need to hate both of these people. And yet, it's not there. That's a weird thing in this film. Is this is a film where, like, spoiler alert, every character except the main character dies horribly, and then it gets magic back in the end. Woo! And you were there, and you were there, and he even gets up in a fucking bed. Anyway.
Oh yeah, no. I was just gonna say, it's not that they were magicked back. It's the even more beautifully cliched. It was all a dream.
Yeah. It was all a dream, but I still have the pen. So I blacked out yesterday after receiving this gift. And anyway. shit. This is a film where the creatives should have hated the characters they are writing. And like, because some of the characters are not, like, few of them are likable, but few of them are fully hateable. And even Cody, who you can tell, like, you're a fucking little psycho.
Yeah.
He's not far enough gone. He's none of this, as you say, almost is the word of the day, because this almost brings the characters to the place where you need them to be, of like, I fucking hate these losers. Kill them. Yes. No, it's just, you're just sitting there going like, okay. Oh, you got rid of the interesting characters. Okay. Oh, you're doing that. Okay. Oh. Okay. That's just, God damn it. It's not that I want to hate this film. And I'm not even sure if I do. I mean, like, when it came to, down to, like visceral fucking hate for a film, it's nothing, it's not like Man of Steel. You know, after we're done this, you know, and I'm done editing this, I'm probably not going to think of Santa Jaws much ever again in my life.
No.
And that's kind of the other point, is like, where's the staying power of even hating this?
Oh, no, this has no staying power of any kind. And I mean, as
it's fascinating.
The thing with this genre of movie, in my opinion anyway, is that as much as we're ragging on the plot and the characters and the cinematography, which, to be perfectly frank, I would like to have some words with that cameraman.
And the soundtrack.
Oh, God, the public domain soundtrack.
Oh, and speaking of which, the copy I was able to get, because this isn't exactly the most available film, there are two copies available to pirate. That's it. And one of them doesn't have any seeds, so go fuck yourself, right? So the one copy I could get of this had a sliding audio track.
Oh, no.
And by the end of the, like it went back and forth. It rarely ever synced up. By the end of the film, the movie's soundtrack had ended before the climax.
I wish you had told me that you were having trouble getting a copy, because I would have thrown mine in the server.
Frankly, I find that when life chooses to give you a shitty copy of a film, there's a reason for that. You know, it's like when I tried to rewatch Audition and couldn't get any of the SRT files to work. And it's like, then I'm not supposed to understand the dialogue in this film. I've seen it before, so I know what's happening. Thus, my appreciation for this is now going to come purely from visual, purely from enjoying it on you know, like as essentially a comic book, you know. No dialogue. And in this case, the universe went, you're not losing anything by having the audio track of this the fuck over the place. Quite frankly, it may have been the only reason I was able to pay attention to this very bland film, because I had to, like, figure out on the fly constantly what was happening and what it was relating to. So, in the end, it probably meant that I actually watched the film.
Well, now, as I was getting to a minute ago, now as I said way back in our Rise of Skywalker review, rule number one for me with pretty much any movie is
Palpatine has to return. Rule one, every time. Second rule of Fight Club, Palpatine has to return. No, first rule of Fight Club, Palpatine has to return. Second rule of Fight Club, you don't tell anyone Palpatine has returned.
No. Like, you remember toward the end of the review, I said, like, first of all, you got to have a good story. And then you gotta have, I think the second thing I said was, like, interesting characters. Now, I would also, I'm mentioning this so that I can note,
I'm sorry, are you telling me Babu Frick does not hold your attention?
Babu Frick was about the only thing enjoyable in that damn movie. Well, that and somebody shooting down a TIE fighter with an arrow, but that's a whole other thing. Which technically I'm about to get to, because I would now like to highlight the expression, there is an exception to every rule.
That's what Lando said when he was hitting on his daughter. This is the Star Wars, baby. It's okay to be incestuous.
Now, the exception to my "I need you to tell me a good story" rule is the entire B-movie shark genre. Now, with this genre, if I've learned anything from the Sharknado films, you're just looking for two things: good shark kills, and how drunk or on drugs were the writers on when the script was made?
Mm, yeah.
The more ridiculous you can get, the more I will love you. And to be perfectly frank, the first act of this movie, I was very concerned because, like you've said, it was bland as hell. And that first act in particular felt like an after-school special made by a faith-based film studio.
Yeah, especially the mom. I love, the rich asshole's wife comes in, and she's like, she's in a bikini and she's wearing shorts. It's an entirely normal piece of clothing to be wearing. And the mom's immediate response after, like, this woman comes screaming about having her husband eaten by a shark is, get her something to put on. I don't want to look at her tits. Cover that up.
Yeah, no, like, make no mistake. But amazingly enough, it's the mom who might be the worst written character in the entire movie.
She's all over the place.
Now, as far as the kills, with the grandpa, it's like, that's when I'm going, okay, you're starting to win me back. Because I applaud the suddenness of it. I applaud the ballsiness of killing such a likable character so early. And I applaud that, oh my god, it looked terrible.
Yeah, and like, I applaud all of those things, but like, there's, even for shit, there's a procedure to this. You get rid of the most unlikable characters first, and you leave the likable character's murder for like near the end, so it has the highest impact, or at least for the turn when the main character fully commits. The grandfather should have been the only person who believed him. The uncle, oh, yeah. And then the uncle's wife should have been the first people murdered. This is how that's supposed to fucking happen. It's bizarre how just like, come on, guys. What was the old man only available for a weekend?
Probably.
Completely undermines its own like great potential.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And but as the movie carries on, like we get to the uncle get being eaten, and it's like, you're bringing me back. But I'm sitting on my couch. I'm going, you're still just missing one more thing. And then they realize that they need Christmas themed weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So they find a storage shed, and now we have exploding Christmas balls. And I'm sitting there going, oh, yes, there, that's it. There we go. That's the stuff.
And it, yeah, so, you know, it's got some commitment. Like, at one point, the shark gets a candy cane horn that it uses to stab people. It's like, okay. In a sequence that feels entirely forced, rushed, and like they wrote it in at that moment because they're like, ah, crap, we need stakes. Shit.
Well,
okay.
Maybe not that literal, but
yeah. But like,
yeah,
there's other things that it loses. At one point, the comic book store owner's like, oh, you guys need weapons? I got weapons. And he turns to a cabinet full of fake comic book store weapons. Why were those weapons themselves like not Christmas themed? They should have like been like, we need weapons. We don't have any weapons. There's got to be something, and like make an arsenal out of decorations. There was so much potential to go full fucking hog at that moment, and they just went, No, we'll just buy these off eBay.
Oh, no, no, like that, that was the standard. Okay, we have to kill this shark. We need weapons. And then you get Georgia being killed by the shark spontaneously using the Christmas lights wrapped around it to lasso her and pull her into the water, which I'm sorry, that might have been one of my favorite kills after one that I'm going to get to in a moment, because it was just funny.
And if the film had committed to that level of stupid, wherein a shark can intentionally lasso you out of water with Christmas lights and pull you in, okay, fine. The shark is absurdly smart. But it's not.
No.
It doesn't follow through with more ridiculously fortuitous and circuitous plans. No. That one kill was good. The rest are not as.
Oh, no. But, and also with the shark's horn, to be perfectly frank, there was only one thing that could have possibly been better. And I don't know how they would do it, but I would have loved one thing.
Mr. Powers, you'll notice that all of the sharks have laser beams attached to their heads. I figure every creature deserves a warm meal.
Dr. Evil, it's about the sharks. When you were frozen, they were put on the endangered species list. We tried to get some, but it would have taken months to clear up the red tape.
You know, I have one simple request. And that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my cycloptic colleague informs me that that can't be done. Can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a bone here. What do we have?
Sea bass.
Right.
They are mutated sea bass.
Really? Are they ill-tempered?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a start.
Yeah, and like, there's a way of doing it with like a Rudolph joke.
Yeah.
You know? But so little of this film forgets that's a holiday movie quite frequently.
Oh yeah, and it as much as it hits some of the best notes of the shark attack film genre, well, again, almost. Like, a lot of the kills I thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, I think my favorite was the elf. Because it's so beautiful. It makes no sense at all. I cannot even logic it into sense. I can't.
Yeah, there's, I guess, why I prefer the lasso kill, because at least that makes some sort of cartoonish sense. Whereas that one's just, oh, we're doing this now, are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, I don't know if you noticed this, but when the kids are battling the shark for the first time, like when they have the weapons, but they haven't figured out yet that they need Christmas-themed weapons.
Yeah.
This is possibly my favorite indication of the film's budget. How the older brother at one point goes to throw the spear at the shark. And the take is the spear kind of floats and lands in the water sideways.
Yeah, it has no weight to it, so it just kind of like, it floats. It floats through the air and lands like someone was just throwing a fucking plank onto some water. Just yeah. Flat. Oh, but, okay. And at least someone calls him out for it.
Oh, but you, even better in terms of, oh my God, how was that the best you could do? At one point, I think it was the first time Cody fires a crossbow bolt, and they cut to the bolt sailing toward the water. And it so clearly looks like someone just gently lobbed it from off camera.
Yeah. We're not even talking Sam Raimi levels of, like, well done cheese to facilitate this. No, they couldn't even, like they couldn't attach the arrow to the camera and spin around quickly, which is all you need to do to create that effect, because it focuses on the arrow. You can't see the background, makes it look like it's going super fucking fast. No. They couldn't even figure that out. God. This film needed to be more daring. It needed to be more everything. Even at the end, it's like, okay, this is a magical fucking shark created by a magical pen. So do you destroy the pen? No. Okay. Only Christmas items work against the shark. So how do you kill the shark? Oh, you burn the comic book. In a Christmas fire? No.
Nope.
Then the fuck is the point? Like, come on. Follow through, people.
Oh, yeah, no, and, like, even, like, with this genre in general, you can almost predict who's going to die, because normally these B-movies will follow this pattern. If your movie has name actors, those are the only people that will survive. No matter who the character they're playing is, it's only the name actors that will survive.
Good news, this movie has no one.
Oh no, I was getting to that now. with a movie like Santa Jaws, where the biggest name actor is probably Courtney Lauren Cummings, who, if I remember right, I think her biggest claim to fame is having had a role in The Vampire Diaries. Oh, and background work in Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Neat.
But yeah, like she's done actual TV, she's done actual film. It's just nothing like noteworthy. But like I said, I'm pretty sure that's as big as it gets. Now, in that scenario, there are two characters that would survive, and those are your only two. And that's your romantic leads. So by the time all is said and done, the only ones that should have survived were Cody and Jenna.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, wait, you killed off one of your romantic leads. That's not how this works.
Yeah, and not the less interesting romantic lead. Like, if, you know what would have been great? Cody dies, and then she has to figure out how to fucking solve this. That would have been a smart twist. But no.
No, like, because it was a dream Cody was having, that couldn't happen for obvious reasons. However, you are right.
I don't think it was a dream. I think the magic reset the day somehow, but because of bad writing, it wasn't fully reset.
No, it's Cody goes to sleep Christmas Eve, and at the end of the movie, when he wakes up, it's, there's no reason not to believe that it's not Christmas Day.
But how does he get the pen?
It's an early Christmas present from Grandpa. Right. Yeah.
That.
Now, frankly, the whole thing would have worked better, I think, if the pen was entirely a part of the dream.
Yeah, that would have been better. Or if, like, it's made overt that the dream is the previous, like, incarnation of that day.
Yeah.
And the pen disappears with it. And it's like, okay, that erases everything. Fine. I just realized that means literally everything he knows about this girl is entirely made up.
Or we go back to his being established early on as pretty clearly an incel stalker.
Yeah.
And he has been watching her for far longer than we're aware of.
Oh, fuck. Oh, there is, however, another point to it not being a dream. Like, it's retroactively turned into a dream. But at the end, he keeps the pen after he burns the comic. And he has that shitty little look on his face, you know, like the to be continued look, where it's like, oh, he is evil. He's going to go off and do terrible things. Would that not imply that the entire film did occur? Albeit now in like a rewritten universe.
Logically, yes. But
we should not bring logic to this fucking film.
Basically, because yeah. To be perfectly frank, I think that's solely to leave the door open for a sequel.
Ed Gein, or no, not Ed Gein. Ed Wood level of adding yep. a question mark at the end of your film for no fucking reason.
Precisely.
No, that's good. That the audience will love it. Okay, Ed. Sit the fuck down. Give me my sweater back.
And as much as we've ragged on the character of the mom, I do want to say to actress Carrie Lazar, your death scene at the dock. I am so sorry you had to do that.
It was bad. So much of it. So much of it is bad.
Like,
so much of it is bad.
As kills go, that looked like the director just told her, you know, just pretend you're being eaten by a shark. Well, what do you mean by that? I don't know. Just make something up.
Yeah. Yeah, and she did, and they went, that was our only take.
Yeah,
well, gotta roll with it.
Yeah, it looked like she was trying, but she didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it looked... It kind of looked like someone trying to figure out the word. But, like, based on descriptions, you've never seen someone perform it. You have no breakdancing skills yourself.
And I mean the CG on that scene looked like I could almost hear the effects department going, yeah, you know your total budget is less than $1 million, right? We don't really
effects.
We don't have the money for that shot.
Effects department? You mean the MacBook that they rendered this on?
Yes. Oh, but I mean, at the end of the day, like I said earlier, the word here is almost.
In every possible way, it's almost bad enough to hate. It's almost good enough to love. It's almost bad enough to love and good enough to hate. But no.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's like, it's
Oh, sorry. Cue in Bill the Butcher saying, "You are lukewarm, thus I spew you out."
Like, it's almost a good enough shark movie to have its place beside Sharknado. And an actor in Reed Miller who's almost good enough to be a lead. You have a pair of romantic leads who almost have chemistry. A best friend character I almost didn't want to punch in the face repeatedly.
And a film that is almost worth remembering. But once again, the second I upload this fucking episode... Yeah. Out it goes.
Like, if right now during the holiday season, You are a college student who, for whatever reason, is stuck in residence for the holiday season. Like, you and, like, a few buddies, like, you can't go home for whatever reason. You get everybody together. You get a case or two of beer. Put this on.
And you watch the Star Wars holiday special instead.
Put this on, get drunk, and laugh your asses off.
Yeah, this is definitely a watch with someone else movie. Oh. If not for at least the ability to go, are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? And not just be talking to yourself.
Oh yeah, it's hilarious, but make no mistake, it is not hilarious in the way that it was probably intended to be.
Yeah. Unless it was, in which case, wow. But again, I don't know. I don't know. I don't, like, maybe this is Tim and Eric level cringe and I just don't get it. I don't know.
It's the Saturday Night Live sketch that should never, ever have been made into a movie.
Yeah, and it just keeps going, and they don't know how to end it. And even Keenan's looking at the camera being like, and when Keenan doesn't know what to do, you know you're fucked.
Missed it by that much.
But you know what Keenan and Maxwell would want you to have done? Watch a better fucking movie, and probably not Good Burger, because that's not necessarily a good one. What are we watching next?
Well, as I said before, I was trying to time this one to get it as close to being released on Christmas Eve as possible. So, better might be debatable, because it's time.
It's time.
It is time for Santa Claus to conquer the Martians.
It's time. So we're going to hop in our fucking time machine and head back to the 1950s when commies were out to get you and the homosexual menace was going to undermine democracy.
And I cannot promise this, but this might be the only week where I could possibly pull this off. We may also be able to crank out a short bonus episode for Muppets Family Christmas.
Mm-hmm. We're going to try.
Yeah,
it must be attempted.
If we can at all do it, we're going to do it. Just knowing our track record, I don't want to guarantee it.
So it might be a December 26th or 27th bonus. Possibly. We will see what we can do, but you know, happy holidays until then. And I for one am looking forward to watching a movie next week that has better effects than this one.
Oh, and with that, I assume you've all already sent your list to Santa. And if you would like to send a list to us of movies that you would like us to, I cannot talk.
Nah.
You know what? Fuck it. We're going to leave this whole thing in because this is so bad. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Contact Columbia House Records at.
As I was trying to say, you can send a list of movies that you would like us to review to stop me from doing this at Real Geeks. At realgeekshfx@gmail.com. Or on what remains of Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. I can be reached directly on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Hive, and two of those I'm still allowed to promote on Twitter. at the Maritime Lord, or you can email me and yell at me for doing this episode directly at themaritimelord@gmail.com.
There you go. And I can be found on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and under Crash and Burn everywhere else. You hear that, Elon? There's a world beyond you, you bastard. Until next time, goodbye and happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Or let's be honest, Merry whatever you celebrate.
Twas the night before Christmas, and all round the beach not a creature was stirring, not even a leech. The stockings were hung by the boathouse with care, in the hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. For Daddy had taken us down to the shore to spend Christmas Eve with the family once more. While Mother and Father lay snug in their bed, my girlfriend and I went down to the shed. We took off our clothes and peeled to the skin and jumped in the water for a midwinter swim. When out of the darkness, she let out a hoot. I just saw a shark in a Santa Claus suit. Then the silence was broken by a terrible din. Jingle bells ringing on a circling fin. We swam and we swam to get out of its reach, till we thought we were finally safe on the beach. When what to our wondrous eyes should appear but a jolly white shark who ate tiny reindeer. Oh, Dasher. Oh, Dancer. Oh, Donner and Blitzen. Oh, Comet, Cupid, Prancer and Vixen. Till one reindeer was left to pull the great sled. Cute little Rudolph, with his nose so red. And then the monster looked at us, and it really was weird. A great white shark with a great white beard. His teeth, how they glistened. With his fins on his belly, he laughed, ho, 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 like 6 tons of jelly. Well, we ran to the house and tried to get in, but the doorway was blocked by the shark's giant fin. His jaws opened wide to bite off my head. But from deep down inside, a voice quietly said,
I'm not so bad. I'm really quite good. But with all those movies, I'm just misunderstood. My yule wish for men is goodwill and peace. And all I want for Christmas is my two front teeth.
And we heard him exclaim as he swam out of sight,
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good fight.